Imagine building like an absolute digital fortress. You architect this platform, and it doesn't just work, it completely dominates.
Right, you're hitting millions of organic visitors.
Exactly. Pulling in massive traffic from the US, shattering the monopolies of mainstream tech media. I mean, it gets to the point where AI titans like ChatGPT and Claude are actually citing your deep dive articles as authoritative ground truth for their global users.
Which is basically getting officially knighted by the internet.
Yeah, you even get official validation from Dubai's In5 Innovation Hub. You are at the absolute undeniable peak of your success. And then you're forced to just reach over and pull the plug.
Put the whole operation on ice.
Right. And not because your code broke or the servers failed, but literally because the physical borders of the country you happen to be standing in are closing in on you.
It's the ultimate collision, really, between the limitless theoretical space of the digital matrix and the brutal, rigid reality of geopolitics.
Welcome to today's deep dive. Today, we are exploring a fascinating blueprint for absolute digital freedom called the Tikkun Protocol, Silicon Autonomy, and the Standby Manifesto.
Written by Majid Ghorbaninazad, the founder of Tikkun Garage.
Right, and it was published today, March 16, 2026. The mission for our deep dive is to really explore this survival guide. It's written by a founder who is systematically putting his incredibly successful operation into what he calls cryosleep due to severe infrastructural limits in his homeland.
But in doing so, he's basically handing you the keys to bypass censorship entirely.
Okay, let's unpack this, because the central irony here is wild. You have this globally recognized platform, but the physical world unplugs you, and the immediate existential threat is total isolation.
Yeah, we like to pretend the digital world is a separate dimension where pure information flows without friction, but servers have to sit somewhere, you know? Fiber optic cables cross real physical borders.
And the developer writing the code needs electricity and an IP address that hasn't been blocked by international sanctions. So the first pillar of this protocol tackles that head on. If they unplug you, you build an unkillable local network.
The shadow internet.
Yes, technologically speaking, mesh networks.
Right, because the standard internet infrastructure we all rely on is actually incredibly fragile. It's highly centralized.
Like internet service providers are basically massive toll bridges.
Exactly. If you want to send a message to a friend across town, your data usually has to travel all the way up to a centralized cell tower or through a main fiber optic trunk and then back down.
It's a hub and spoke model.
Yeah, so if a government wants to kill the flow of information, they don't need to confiscate everyone's phones.
They just blow up the toll bridge.
They flip a switch at the ISP level, and suddenly millions of users are just trapped on isolated digital islands.
But the genius of the mesh network is that it entirely removes that toll bridge. Your phone simply becomes the cell tower.
Right, everyday devices mutate into what are called nodes.
Smartphones, laptops, even smart thermostats. They use protocols that don't even need an ISP. We're talking Bluetooth low energy, Wi-Fi direct, and radio frequencies like LoRaWAN.
The data doesn't go up to a corporate server at all. It just hops laterally from device to device.
It's like passing notes in a massive classroom when the teacher has banned talking out loud.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it.
Right, if one student gets caught or an aisle is blocked, the note just gets routed through a completely different row of desks.
Yeah, and that analogy perfectly captures the math happening under the hood. In a true mesh architecture, these nodes are constantly running dynamic routing algorithms
So they're calculating the best path.
in milliseconds. When you send a packet of data, the network finds the safest path across hundreds of surrounding devices.
Wow.
If a government drops a localized jammer, or if someone's phone just runs out of battery and a node dies, the data doesn't stop. The algorithm instantly recalculates around the dead zone.
Like water rushing around a boulder dropped into a stream.
Exactly. And then you add long-range jumps into the mix.
Right, which is where LoRaWAN comes in. Long-range wide area network. Now, obviously, it doesn't have the bandwidth to stream like a 4K video,
No, definitely not.
but it can push encrypted text or code packets across miles of physical space using incredibly low power. You string a few of these LoRa nodes across a city, bounce signals off regular smartphones in between, and this shadow internet becomes mathematically impossible to shut down.
Unless every single electronic device in a 50-mile radius is physically located and crushed.
Which is logistically impossible. So the infrastructure of defiance is solid. The data can move. But moving data is really only half the battle in modern software development.
Right, because you need computational power.
Exactly. And here's where I have to push back a little on the practical limitations of this shadow internet. The mesh network keeps me connected to my neighbor, sure. It lets sanctioned developers share code, but it doesn't give them access to an A100 GPU cluster sitting in a data center in California.
No, it doesn't.
When tech giants bow to international sanctions, they block IP addresses. A developer in a restricted zone gets an access denied error when they try to ping OpenAI or Anthropic.
Right.
They're locked out of the AI revolution entirely. So, wait, isn't a local offline AI going to be incredibly weak compared to giant cloud supercomputers?
What's fascinating here is how the technological singularity of 2026 has completely inverted that dynamic.
Really?
Yeah. The second pillar of the protocol is silicon autonomy. We are no longer solely reliant on massive cloud infrastructure for high-level machine reasoning.
Okay.
The landscape right now is dominated by hyper-optimized small language models, or SLMs. Mm. The protocol highlights models like Llama, 3.8b, Mistral, and Gemma.
Right. These open weight models punch drastically above their parameter count. But how do they actually run on a disconnected laptop in a sanctioned zone?
That is thanks to a process called quantization.
Oh, quantization is the absolute secret weapon here. Think of an AI model like a hyper-realistic high-resolution photograph. Historically, these models were built using 32-bit floating point precision. That is the 4K uncompressed image. Every microscopic calculation is perfectly rendered. But running that requires server farm levels of memory.
Hundreds of gigabytes of VRAM that just do not exist on a consumer laptop.
Exactly. So quantization is a highly aggressive compression technique. It compresses the model's neural weights from 32-bit precision down to 4-bit or even 2-bit. It systematically strips out the extreme decimal points.
But the immediate assumption most people have is that if you compress the data that severely, you lobotomize the AI. You make it stupid.
Right. But that ignores the concept of neural redundancy. Deep learning models are inherently over-parameterized. They learn the same concepts across multiple different pathways.
So when you quantize, you lose some granular texture, but the core reasoning stays intact.
To borrow that photograph analogy, it's like applying a slight compression filter to a 4K image. Zoom in to a microscopic level, you might see some pixelation, but you still instantly recognize the face.
And the mechanical result is that this highly capable reasoning engine suddenly fits into 8 gigabytes of standard laptop RAM, or runs natively on the neural processing unit, the NPU, of a smartphone.
You boot up software like LM Studio or a Llama, and the AI runs locally on the silicon sitting right on your desk.
And the so what, for the listener here, goes way beyond bypassing sanctions. When a quantized model runs locally, your device becomes a black hole for data privacy.
Total privacy.
Exactly. Not a single byte of your prompts or your proprietary code ever goes to a corporate server. It mocks physical borders.
A government could sever every undersea cable, and that silicon advisor remains fully awake and totally untraceable.
Right.
Okay, so the foundation is set. You survive the unplugging with a dynamic mesh network, and you establish silicon autonomy with offline AI. You have an indestructible matrix. But what do you actually do with it?
You demolish the walls that keep humanity divided. And the protocol argues the biggest barrier isn't a firewall, it's language.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The third pillar is universal AI translators.
Operating locally on those same NPUs.
Yeah, because we've had translation software for decades, but it's always been this terribly clunky assembly line. You speak, the software runs speech to text, it translates that flat text, and feeds it into a robotic voice.
By the time it comes out, all the emotion and organic context is just dead.
Totally dead. But the protocol points toward multimodal models, like Seamless M4T. These models discard the text middleman entirely.
Right. They perform direct audio-to-audio translation by mapping acoustic features into a latent space.
Latent space mapping is such a wild concept to wrap your head around. The AI isn't listening for the English word sarcasm and looking for the Japanese equivalent text.
No, it's analyzing the acoustic wave, the slight pitch shift, the microscopic pause, the heavy sigh.
It registers those features as mathematical data points of emotion in fractions of a second.
Without a cloud connection. And the manifesto paints this incredible picture of a unified global society. Imagine a Japanese user, an American developer, and an Iranian gamer in a decentralized virtual lobby.
Hosted on a mesh network.
Yes. They are speaking their native tongues, and their local silicon is flawlessly translating the audio in real time. They understand each other perfectly, complete with sarcasm and empathy. Geographic borders just vanish.
It's a profound vision. But the reality is, corporations love to lock this kind of bleeding-edge technology inside incredibly expensive black boxes.
Oh, absolutely. They want to sell you a subscription.
Which necessitates the fourth pillar, the open source renaissance.
If there is a savior against corporate monopolies, it's the open source movement. The matrix isn't being cracked by one tech messiah. It's hundreds of thousands of unsung programmers worldwide.
The philosophy of Silicon Democracy. Code has no passport. Once a foundational architecture is released under an open source license, no regulatory body can put the genie back in the bottle.
You can sanction a hardware shipment, but you can't sanction an open GitHub repo accessible via a mesh hop. The manifesto cites very specific tools.
Like Linux operating systems.
Right, which strip away corporate telemetry. And Hugging Faced AI architectures, where developers collaborate on quantized weights. And crucially, the Godot game engine.
Godot is a fascinating inclusion in a survival manifesto.
But it makes sense. A game engine is essentially a platform for building virtual realities. When corporate engines get bogged down in licensing fees, Godot lets a developer in a sanctioned zone build complex environments without asking for permission.
Anyone with a basic mesh connection can pull that code and architect their own future. It proves science is the indisputable right of humanity.
But having open source code on a local network is useless without human ingenuity. Who is actually driving this revolution?
Needy developers.
Yeah.
It's the independent creators using technology for prosperity. There is this incredibly poignant detail from the source.
The itch.io backlink.
Yes. Majid was running diagnostics on his site's inbound traffic, and he found an organic backlink. It wasn't from a massive corporate blog. It was from a solo, independent game developer on itch.io.
This one developer had read Tikkun Garage's hardcore hosting comparison deep dive and was sharing it as a trusted resource.
Imagine the contrast.
Yeah.
You have AAA studios with hundreds of millions of dollars trying to dictate the market.
Versus a single dev with a laptop and raw creativity.
Right. Tikkun Garage aligns with the authentic value of indie devs over corporate ad budgets because that indie spirit is the only thing capable of surviving a localized blackout.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, that indie philosophy extends directly into how the protocol views the future of AI, the light side of silicon.
Because mainstream media constantly villainizes AI. It's always painted as this job-stealing Terminator or a drone pilot.
Yeah, the protocol completely rejects that. It argues that global processing power must serve absolute prosperity, not calculate missile trajectories.
We're talking about algorithms folding proteins to find cures for terminal diseases in weeks.
Or machine learning hyper-optimizing impoverished water grids so nobody goes thirsty during a shortage.
Or climate models evacuating people before storms, even when the national radar grid goes down.
It's an incredibly defiant, optimistic view of technology.
Which carries so much weight knowing it was written by someone currently being forced offline. Majid is returning to a homeland with severe infrastructure limits. The site is entering cryosleep.
But as he notes in his final debug message, this cryosleep is merely a semicolon in the code, not a period.
Right. A semicolon just separates statements. The logic continues. He promises to find any loophole to return with automated Tikkun morning and Tikkun night updates to keep the lights on. The archives remain open.
Which is an incredible commitment.
So what does this all mean for you? Why should a survival protocol written by a sanctioned developer matter to you?
Because it's a reminder of the power sitting in your pocket.
Exactly. If you have a smartphone, you have a dormant mesh node, you have the hardware to run offline, quantized AI without pinging a cloud, you have the tools for unrestricted knowledge and privacy. You just have to choose to use them.
It leaves you with a really profound thought to mull over. If these decentralized tools mesh networks, offline SLMs, universal translators, become so deeply embedded in our everyday devices that they are mathematically impossible to shut down, will the physical borders drawn on our maps eventually cease to have any real meaning at all in human society?
It fundamentally changes the architecture of control. Inside the matrix, the local networks are humming, the code is compiling, and the lights are always on.
Until next time.